Is there such a thing as failing in retirement? Can a person who has successfully navigated their life to finally reach this stage of rest and relaxation, can that lead them to become an utter failure in the one thing they've been planning for so many years? It's a good question, and one that Bob Laura, founder of the retirementproject.org and Retirement Coaches Association, has written extensively about, and he joins me today. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Hey, you know, I read a lot of financial planning and investment articles, and they mostly focus on the math of financial planning, you know, investment rates of return, charting your financial course, probability analysis, and so on. But you look more closely at the emotional impact of these aspects of our lives. And in a recent blog, you quoted a woman who had written to you, and this is really what got me interested in having you on the show, because it really moved me. I'd like you to read an excerpt from what she wrote you.
Sure. And stuff like this comes across my desk on a regular basis, and when it does, I definitely want to tune into it. But the lady wrote, "I never had trouble with low self-esteem before retirement. I always associated my worth with what I did and or being needed, not just being. That was a big mistake. I am no longer needed in my relationship. I was a good corporate wife who stayed home to raise her son so Bill could focus on his career. Now that he's retired, I'm not needed the same way, and the kids are grown, so I'm no use in that function either. When Bill was working, I was the person who held down the fort, but those days are over. I'm no longer needed because he is here all the time. I know he used to be so proud of me and happy about my performance, but no more. And of course, I'm not doing all those things he needed for me in the past. I have an active outside life, a healthy self-esteem there, but not as a wife. This can't be so unusual, I guess."
Wow. That's a very grievous statement. It's a kind of a real emotional, kind of a sense of depression in that language. What did you make of that?
Yeah, you know, you can feel kind of the anguish that she has. And so I think it's really, you know, helping people kind of understand and kind of to figure that stuff out, you know, because really it doesn't get talked about enough, but because everyone pictures retirement as this perfect picture time where everything is just happy and perfect, but she's really grieving the loss of her role. She used to be a mom. She used to be a corporate wife, and that's gone. And there's really, it's not a simple process.
Yeah.
Who do you really turn to talk about like stuff like that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a vacuum that can be created, and it takes time to figure out the next part of your life and how you're going to fill that vacuum. I think this process is pretty natural. You see it across the board, or is this something that just a few people seem to experience?
No, it happens all the time. And that's the power, I think, or the opportunity for, I think, whether it's financial professionals, human resource people, just, you know, friends in general, to help people, you know, to recognize this, to help them see that, hey, this can be, retirement is a difficult transition. There are things that you're going to lose that may take time to replace. And so by just making people more aware of it, and in this situation with this lady, when I said, you know, it sounds like you're grieving the loss of your role,
yeah,
it created some awareness for her that she just had not kind of put grief in tune with what was happening to her.
It's a sort of disenfranchisement. You're no longer part of the world that you were. Is that a particular kind of grief? I mean, once you've recognized it, that you can start to work with?
Yeah, you're spot on with it. It's actually referred to as disenfranchised grief. And if you think about grief normally, it's typically associated with losing a loved one or maybe something like a divorce. But, you know, in the case of retirement, it's not honored the same way. People can't empathize with you the same way they can when you lose someone. And so when it's disenfranchised, it's not honored, but it doesn't take away, and feelings aren't right or wrong, so it doesn't take away from how that person is feeling. And again, the opportunities to open the door for them to really talk about their situation, talk about what they're missing, because that's a big part of restoring the situation and finding ways to move on and replace that piece.
So this grieving process, what can one do in order to reduce it? I know you wrote that at first it feels like a 100-foot wave is crashing on you, but over time it becomes a 50-foot wave, and obviously it reduces over time, though you say in your writing that it never really goes away, and that's a good thing. But what can you do?
Well, I think finding support, and whether that's family and friends, and again, I think a big part of it is restoring it, you know, so writing a journal. And again, as you go through these tough times, you actually become an expert at them. So sharing what you're going through with other people, and then eventually when you get to a point to kind of coach other people, it repositions you to do that. And I think the other thing is you can honor the situation by, you know, again, putting a booklet or articles or a blog or teaching a class on the different things. You don't have to, in the past, one of the big myths about grief is you have to forget it and move on. That's not really true. You can maintain a bond, and over time it becomes, you know, something positive instead of something negative that you can leverage in your life.
All right, so we've been talking about grief, but I want to get to this idea that it is possible to have retirement failure. So what would constitute a failure in retirement? It doesn't seem possible, actually. You know, let me say this first. You know, you spend your whole life trying not to fail. You're going to fail at certain things, but then you pick yourself up and you start all over again, as the song says. But retirement's not supposed to be about that. It's supposed to be about living, you know, your one best life now that you don't have those kind of constraints.
Right. You know, but it's like any other phase of life, whether it's having kids or marriage, going off to school, whatever the case may be. There's things you have to adapt to. That's a massive vacuum that happens. And don't get me wrong, there are plenty of people who make a smooth transition, but they understand what it's take. They plan beyond the dollars and cents. And so the issue with retirement is there's so much focus on the positive aspects that nobody thinks about the negatives. What's going to be removed? What do I have to replace? What's this going to feel like? And again, one of the biggest issues you see out there with people is socially. You know, who are they going to connect with? And yeah, you're still best friends with your friends at work, but they're working and you're not. And so
that's gonna go.
A lot of dynamics play out. And again, there's just vague assumptions is probably the biggest thing that people just kind of assume, hey, this is just going to work out and be great. And that's just not how it goes.
My guest is Bob Laura. He's founder of retirementproject.org, and he's a retirement coach and head of the Retirement Coaches Association. So that's why he knows this stuff. Bob, you described four of the root causes. You know, a lot of the discussions center around the symptoms, how I feel, but they don't talk about the root causes. And you've identified four of them. Tell us about them.
So the first one, as I mentioned, is vague assumptions. Kind of the piece there is people kind of assume, oh, when I retire, I'm going to volunteer, I'm going to do this and that. And then they get there and it doesn't turn out to be that way. So they just kind of make these assumptions. Or like work part-time from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. with no weekend work or holidays and make a good living, you know.
Yeah.
That stuff doesn't work. And so it's really about the opportunities to put practical, concrete things in place to know where you're going to volunteer. Because you may decide to volunteer at the local hospital, but just the work isn't rewarding.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah.
You want to do that trial and error. Or you may find a job that you don't like, or you have to work weekends. And so going into it with good expectations is important, not just kind of assuming it's going
to
work.
Yeah, I want to go back to this idea about the kind of things you think you're going to do when you're going to work part-time after retirement. You said it, you went by it fast, I want to repeat it. You know, you may think, hey, I'm going to work 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. Monday through Thursday, you know,
right.
And you know, the world doesn't necessarily work like that. You know, the jobs you may find may not even exist. So you're going to have to change your expectations. So this is all under the idea of the root cause is that you start out with vague assumptions and you want to get, I guess, more specific and find out, I guess, if, you know, if you were active in business or in art and you achieve something and now you're ready for retirement, you probably know how to organize things and to look ahead a little bit and to write some things down. The second root cause you mentioned is role ambivalence. What is that?
That's just where this primarily happens with married couples at home, you know, where now that you're both at home and retired, do roles change? And if so, how do they change? And how do you even talk about it and orchestrate it? And how do you reciprocate and honor each other's space and their routine?
Uh-huh.
And then I think the other role ambivalence is, you know, you don't think about bullying or peer pressure when it comes to retirees, but, you know, as you get closer and all of a sudden you feel like, well, gosh, I'm 65. Am I supposed to retire? Well, gosh, I'm 65 and now there's a buyout offer. And you can feel pressured into different situations. And so this mental tug of war takes place. And that, again, is why you want to start to develop these concrete plans. You want to have a financial plan so that you know your numbers and where you stand, so that when these situations come up, you don't have to be confused. You can be prepared to take action.
There's some peer pressure here, too, because if you're of retirement age and now many of your friends are retired And they're going, hey, Bob, why are you still working? I don't understand. Right. And you're like, yeah, why am I still working? Well, I kind of like it, but you know, I should be playing golf with my buddies more often or something like that. So there's that kind of issue, like peer pressure. I thought only, you know, middle school and high school, but peer pressure. Right. You know, I had a 90-year-old client who basically would not tell her friends her age. And I said, why wouldn't you do that? She says, because they'll treat me differently.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, she's 90 and she's still worrying about that stuff. Well, that got off base here, but let's go to talent and skill reversal, because now if you come home and you're a CFO and you go, okay, I'm taking over the bills, I'm reorganizing the house, right. That's got to cause some problems.
Well, it disrupts the routine. And again, we live in a strength-based society, so use your strengths, do what you're good at, right? Well,
yeah.
At work and at home are two different scenarios. And so you really have to take a look at, you know, what life is going to be like and step back and kind of say, you know, that's not going to necessarily work. And so it's being really mindful and conscious of your own situation as well as the other people around you, because, you know, again, you know, a mechanic can fix lots of stuff. Well, he can't fix his health problems. And so really understanding where you can plug in and do the good things is important. And again, this is why I really suggest people consider retirement coaches, because it's not easy stuff to talk about or figure about. But if people go in prepared, or at least aware of it, they know how to manage the stuff better.
Yeah, that's a very good. You have a good statistic here that 70% of pre-retirees think that life will be better in retirement, but only 40% of actual retirees find that it is. Very, very interesting dispersion there. So finally, poor communication is the fourth root. Tell us about that.
Yeah, like, you know, I think one of the issues for most people is they have these great ideas in their head, but it never makes it to their mouth or a piece of paper. And that's fertile ground for arguments, disagreements, and not being on the same page. And again, whether it's, you know, with a couple or a single, divorced or widowed or widower and their children and grandchildren, really is about taking the time to tell people what's going on. And also recognizing the stuff you're going to be talking about with this transition to retirement isn't a one-time conversation. It could take multiple, it could take months to kind of figure some things out, but it's about starting that process and moving things from what you're thinking about to what you need to say and share and write down.
Good stuff. Good stuff to avoid being a failure in retirement, if there really is such a thing. My guest, Bob Laura, founder of retirementproject.org and Retirement Coaches Association. Bob, what website can you be found at?
Retirementproject.org's got all sorts of stuff. It's got our book, Naked Retirement, which is about the non-financial aspects. My new book, Retirement RX, which is kind of a chicken soup for the soul. But that's the best place to check my stuff out.
Sounds great. Thank you so much for joining me, Bob.
Thanks, Steve.
To hear this conversation again, don't forget to go to stevepomerantz.com, and all the links are there for Bob's website, as well as his books and other things as well. So once again, stevepomerantz.com.